Lost Horizon by James Hilton. Geoffrey Matthews reads the 9th of 10 episodes.
Conway stood watching the High Lama's lifeless face, now a dark shadowed mask. Behind the tiny dead figure in this hothouse room, the tapestries stirred in an alien breeze, as though the storm in the outside world would break through into the Lamasery of Shangri-La. As he crossed the room to the door, it occurred to Conway he didn't in the least know how to summon help. The Tibetans he knew had all been sent away for the night, and he had no idea where to find Chang or anyone else. He stood uncertainly on the threshold of the dark corridor, lost in the wonder of that final astonishing interview with the High Lama. At last he stumbled into the courtyards and by the fringe of the lotus pool. And then, suddenly, he was aware that Mallinson was near him, holding his arm, leading him away in a great hurry. He didn't gather what it was all about, but he could hear that Mallinson was chattering excitedly. So they reached the balconied room where they had meals, Mallinson still clutching his arm and half-dragging him along.
"Come on, Conway. We've got till dawn to pack what we can and get away. Great news, man. I wonder what old Barnard and Miss Brinkley will think in the morning when they find us gone. The porters are about 5 miles beyond the pass. They came yesterday with loads of books and things. Tomorrow they begin the journey back. I say, what's the matter? Are you ill?"
Conway had sunk into a chair and was leaning forward, elbows on the table. "Ill? No, I don't think so. Just rather tired."
Probably the storm. Where were you all the time? I've been waiting for you for hours."
I'm sorry," said Conway. "I'm still not quite with you. You say the porters..."
"Yes, the porters. They're there waiting in the valley. We've got to get down and join them."
"You're thinking of going down to them? I suppose you realize it mayn't be quite as simple as it sounds."
"Well, fortunately, Conway, I haven't you to rely on for arranging things, because they've been arranged. The porters are paid in advance, and they've agreed to take us. And here are clothes and equipment for the journey all ready. So, your last excuse disappears. Well, come on, let's do something."
"But I don't understand," said Conway. "Who's been making all these plans?"
"Well, if you must know, the Chinese pianist you're so fond of listening to, Lo Tsen. She's done everything, and she's with the porters now. She's waiting."
"Lo Tsen? Waiting?"
"Yes. Well, she's coming with us. I assume you've no objection."
"But this is nonsense, Mallinson. It's quite impossible. There are all sorts of reasons, but take my word for it, it won't do. It's incredible enough that she should be down there now, but the idea of her going any further, it's just preposterous."
"I don't see that it's preposterous at all," said Mallinson. "It's just as natural for her to want to leave here as for me."
"But she doesn't want to leave. That's where you make the mistake."
"Then why did she say she'd come?"
"I asked her. In Tibetan."
Miss Brinkley worked out the words. It wasn't a very fluid conversation, but it was quite enough to, well, to lead to an understanding.
On a sudden impulse, Conway said, "Let me explain something to you. When you've heard what I've got to tell you, you will understand, I hope, a great deal of what now seems very curious and very difficult. At any rate, you'll realize why Lo Tsen can't possibly go back with you." Conway then gave, as briefly as he could, the whole story of Shangri-La as told him by the High Lama. It was the last thing he ever intended to do, but he felt that in the circumstances it was justified and even necessary. Only one thing he withheld: the fact of the High Lama's death that night and of his own succession. When he had finished, he looked up calmly, confident that he'd done well. But Mallinson merely said,
"I really don't know what to say, Conway, except that you must be completely mad. What's such utter nonsense? Seems to me rather beyond arguing about."
"You think it's It's nonsense.
How else can I look at it? I won't say that the story of a fellow sent out to decoy strangers back here is literally impossible, though it does seem to me ridiculously far-fetched. But when you tack it on to all sorts of other things that are absolutely impossible... Well, all this about the llamas being hundreds of years old. Well, it just makes me wonder what's got into you.
Yes. I dare say you find it hard to believe. Perhaps I did myself at first. Of course, it is an extraordinary story, but think of all that we've actually seen, both of us. A lost valley in the midst of unexplored mountains. A monastery with a library of European books.
Oh, yes, said Manson. And a central heating plant and modern plumbing and afternoon tea and everything else. Oh, it's all very marvellous, I know.
Now, look here, Conway. It's got on your nerves, this place, and I really don't wonder at it. Well, pack up your things and let's quit.
I'm sorry, Manson. I have no desire to go back at all.
You're going to stay here like the other two. And at least you won't stop me from clearing out of it.
Goodbye, Manson.
For the last time, are you coming?
I can't. Goodbye. They shook hands, and Manson left.
Conway sat alone in the lantern light, still in the dream that had persisted since his last interview with the High Lama. It seemed to him that the outside world and Shangri-La were finally beyond reconciliation. He was still at the table hours later, smoking the last of his cigarettes, when Manson returned.
Hello? What's happened? Why are you back?
Manson pulled off his heavy sheepskins and sat down. His face was white.
Well... I hadn't the nerve, he said. That place where we were all roped together on the way here, do you remember? Yes, well, I got as far as that, but well, I couldn't manage it. I've no head for heights, and in the moonlight, it looked terrifying. It was silly, isn't it? Oh, they needn't worry, these llamas here. Nobody will ever threaten them by land, but by God, I'd give a good deal to fly over with a load of bombs.
Why would you do that, Manson?
Because the place wants smashing up. It's all wrong. And if your impossible yarn were true, it would be more hateful still. Not a wizened old men crouching here like spiders, waiting for anybody who comes near. It's horrible. You know, who'd want to live to an age like that anyway? Oh, why won't you come away with me, Conway? I hate imploring you for my own sake, but after all, I'm young. Does my whole life mean nothing to you? And Lord Sand, too. She's young. Doesn't she count at all?
Lord Sen is not young, said Conway. She looks 17, but she's older. Much, much older.
You're raving, Conway, you're raving.
Her beauty, Manson, is a fragile thing. Take it away from the life-giving air of this valley, and you will see it fade like an echo.
Now, look, tell me seriously, Conway, what evidence have you got for this story of yours? What proofs? None at all, as far as I can see. Well, has Lotsen ever told you her history?
No, Manson, she hasn't, but...
Then why believe it from somebody else? But all this old age business, can you point to a single outside fact in support of it? You've seen a few old men, that's all it amounts to. Be honest, Conway. I really can't see why you should believe everything you're told just because you're in Tibet.
Conway nodded, unable to restrain approval of a point well made. And after a moment he said, "There's just one question that I would like to ask. Are you in love with Lotsen?"
"Yes, I am, Conway. I know you say it's absurd and unthinkable. It probably is, but I can't help my feelings."
"No, I don't think it's absurd at all."
"Nonsense it all is about her not being young. Oh, Conway, you can't believe it. It's just too ridiculous."
"Are you quite sure that she's young?"
"Positive, Conway. She's just a girl. and our falling in love is about the only good thing that's ever happened in this place.
Conway went to the balcony and gazed at the dazzling mountain that soared behind the lamasery. The moon was riding higher in a waveless ocean. Her dream had dissolved, like all too lovely things at the first touch of reality. And he saw that the whole world's future, weighed in the balance against youth and love, would be as nothing. He didn't know whether he had been mad and was now sane, or whether, for a brief moment, he had been sane and was now mad again. But when he turned round from the window, there was a difference in him. He looked much more like the Conway who'd first come to Shangri-La.
Do you think you could manage that tricky descent with a rope, Melanson, if I were with you? He said. Melanson sprang forward. You mean you've made up your mind at last? You'll come with us, Conway?
They left as soon as Conway had prepared himself for the journey. It was surprisingly simple to leave, a departure rather than an escape. There were no incidents as they crossed the bars of moonlight and shadow in the courtyards. One might have thought there was nobody there at all, Conway reflected. And the idea of such emptiness became an emptiness in himself. How strange that this secret sanctuary should be forsaken by one who had found in it such happiness. For indeed, less than an hour later, they halted breathlessly at a curve of the track and saw the last of Shangri-La. Deep below them, the valley was like a cloud, and Conway, the scattered roofs, had a look of floating after him through the haze. He prepared the rope for the knife-edge traverse, and though Melanson was nervous at the precipice, Conway got him over in traditional mountaineering fashion. When that trial was passed, they paused, and Melanson tried to express something of what he was feeling.
Conway, I must say it's damn good of you. I can't tell you how glad I am.
I wouldn't try, then, if I were you.
Well, I am glad. Not only for my own sake, but for yours as well. It's fine that you can realize now that all those tales about eternal youth are sheer nonsense. It's just wonderful to see you, your real self again.
That was episode 9 of Lost Horizon by James Hilton. It was read by Jeffrey Matthews.